Support comes from the Midland Theater, presenting Frank D'Ambrosio's Broadway. Best known for his portrayal of the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera, D'Ambrosio's solo show celebrates the music of Broadway Sunday afternoon, April 14th. Tickets and more information at MidlandTheater.org.
Good morning, I'm Christopher Purdy, pleased to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend, my favorite edition, the books edition, and we have, I guess, a couple of debutantes here for the panel and one new old friend, starting with Michelle Herman, who makes her debut on All Sides Weekend's books. Michelle is the director of the Creative Writing Program, the MFA program at The Ohio State University, and her new book is called Stories We Tell Ourselves, and we'll be talking about that shortly. Mark Maxwell is a manager for Half Price Books at Bethel Road. He will tell you what to buy and read. And I tend to write down everything that he mentions because he's not wrong. He was wrong once, but we won't talk about that now. But he generally is not wrong in recommending a book. And Ed Hoffman makes a return to our stations after a number of years. Ed Hoffman is the Chatelaine, I guess, directs Ed Hoffman Books. He is an antiquarian book dealer here in Columbus with a national reach. He's been here for a number of years, and you come from a book-selling family in a way, don't you?
Well, my the family's been key to the business, I'd say, Chris. Yeah.
And we're going to chat a bit about books and then ask for your calls. I'd like to know what you are reading, what you would recommend, what you didn't like. And I want to start by telling a little story about Michelle Herman. When I was living in out of state for many years, I found a book in a bookstore that looked good. It was called Missing. I took it home and read it in one sitting and then read it again because I liked it so much. And when I got to Columbus, I found out that the author of Missing was one Michelle Herman, who A, teaches here, and B, is a neighbor. So I knew Michelle Herman before I ever met her. And if you ever want to give a wonderful gift of a book, give Missing by Michelle Herman. She is here with a brand new book to tell us about. So how many books now have you written? Have you published?
Oh, let's see. Five.
Five. Okay. And you've got one in the planning stage, right?
Or I actually have two that, with any luck, will be out next year.
We asked everybody off mic if any of us blogged, and I do. And you said blog. When am I going to write?
If I blogged, I wouldn't have time to write.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Mark Maxwell, you brought a stack of books for us to talk about, including one of my favorites at the very top. And I'd love you're bringing beloved titles as well that people might have forgotten or need to read again.
Indeed.
And that's one of them. And Ed Hoffman is going to tell us what these books are worth at some point and how to get them. So let's start with you, Mark. What do you have for us today?
Well, there's been a lot of interest lately in The Great Gatsby. There's about to be a new film version. A lot of people are reading or rereading Gatsby. I've been suggesting as a companion to that, A Movable Feast by Ernest Hemingway. It's not an obscure book, but it's not as well read as many of Hemingway's other titles. It's his memoir of life in the 20s in Paris as an expatriate. The material comes from notebooks that he kept at the time, but he reworked some of the material and had an almost complete version of it by the time that he died. It's valuable for a couple of reasons. It gives us some insight into Hemingway's process, which is fascinating, but also it includes some portraits of people who also lived in Paris at the time. Gertrude Stein is here. Ford Madox Ford is here. And F. Scott Fitzgerald is here. Some people have argued that the Fitzgerald material in particular is maybe a bit mean-spirited. But it's certainly readable and it's fascinating.
One wonderful part of that book is a scene where he's sitting at a cafe in Paris having white wine and oysters for like a dime back in 1923,
right.
And just watching the world go by. And the way he describes that is makes you salivate and wish you were like 150 years old and you would experience that. So I thank you for that. Ed Hoffman, how does one deal with you as a consumer?
You know, the business has changed so much, Christopher, and it's virtually all online these days, at least in our case, unlike, half-price books where you can, go and it's an active public shop. Our main focus is listing books on the Internet, and we do eBay and Amazon and all the rest, although we're still open by appointment, and we do invite people to come and browse our books. So that's been the change.
So you do have you have books in your facility.
Absolutely, right. Yeah, we do, and we welcome people to come and browse.
Would you call yourself an independent bookstore?
Yeah. Good. Oh yeah. As you know, we like to consider ourselves independent in every way, and that's right. So we do welcome to book.
So if I had a specific title that I had trouble finding, I would call Ed Hoffman, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Herbert von Karajan, A Life in Music by Richard Osborne. Discuss. I'm trying to find that and I can't. So Michelle, tell me about Stories We Tell Ourselves, your new book. I'm holding it in my hand. It's from the University of Iowa Press.
Well, the first thing I want to tell you as you're holding it in your hand is that the cover of the book is a painting by my husband. The artist Glenn Holland, and for 20 years I had been trying to get an image of his on the cover of a book of mine, and this was finally the book that that fit a painting of his. The book is it's a volume of two novella-length essays, personal essays, and what they have in common is that they're both about the unconscious one way or another, and they're both a sort of mashup of autobiography/memoir and scientific, psychoanalytic research, cultural history. The first of them is about dreams, why we dream, how we dream, what it means that we dream, and a virtual compendium of dreams of by people I know. And the second one is called Seeing Things, and it's about the way the mind makes metaphor and meaning. Symptoms, the way we make art, all of that. It sounds much drier than it actually is.
Well, I've read some of it, and you're not dry, so your writing isn't dry. Right, yeah. It is a storyteller, and you're learning stuff about people who you could, there's a lot to relate here to anybody who picks this book up, so I would recommend it. But this one of your books that I really want to talk about, it's called Memoirs of Motherhood, that a lot of people have loved, and I know because I know you what the birth of your daughter meant to you, and that's wonderfully reflected. Can you talk about that book a little bit?
So it's interesting that you remember the title as Memoirs of Motherhood. The book is called The Middle of Everything, and its subtitle, Memoirs of Motherhood, was actually put on it by its publisher because nobody knew what the book was, because it's not really a memoir. It, too, is a collection of personal essays. When we talk about the personal essay, which is something I teach, we're talking about a combination of autobiography, memoir, and then expounding on ideas, which is what I think I like to do. I'm not particularly interested in just telling my story, although I love to tell stories, but I also like to use my story as a jumping-off point. And that book, The Middle of Everything, really was about raising my daughter. It's about motherhood and daughterhood and granddaughterhood and friendship between women and what it means for women to age and what it means for girls to grow up in a series of connected essays. And one of the two books that are kind of in the hopper, I guess, is a phrase I've never used before, is a sort of sequel to The Middle of Everything. It's another set of essays. It's called Like a Song, and it's another set of essays that is in part about raising my daughter, but because she is now almost 20, my job is nearly done where she's concerned. So it touches on that, but it moves on to talk about other things.
When I say creative writing, in my head, that means fiction exclusively. But am I wrong?
You would be wrong.
Okay. That's the third time on air today you've told me I'm wrong about something.
Give me more opportunities, Christopher.
All right.
The first time you came over to my house, you told me I was wrong, and I've never forgotten
it.
You picked up, and I wish I could remember the opera, you picked up a CD I had of an opera, and you said, this is not the one you should be listening to.
Oh, it was probably very esoteric Czech or Russian opera. Yeah, knowing it wasn't La Boheme, so I put it that way.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you would be wrong. It's creative writing encompasses a lot more than fiction.
Yeah, and I have to say, until I got the job at Ohio State in 1988, I actually never called myself a creative writer. I still don't. I mean, it still seems silly. Creative writer sounds like basket weaving writer to me. But what's meant by the term creative writing generally is fiction, poetry, and what is usually known as creative nonfiction, another term I'm not crazy about. But creative nonfiction encompasses a great deal. It encompasses all nonfiction that is not journalism, biography, scholarly. So we're talking about memoir, the personal essay, my favorite. Lyric essays, which read more like poems, literary journalism, which is journalism where the presence of the author is just as important as the subject, nature writing, all of that kind of stuff.
Write some mystery stories, too.
Then I would have a platform.
Then you have a platform, yes. Ed, what kind of books are people looking for when they come to you? I know on your website you have huge category lists.
Yeah. You know, the hottest thing in our business, in a way, is ephemera and paper and pamphlets.
Really?
And that's partly been driven because with the Internet, you know, you can find books, in a way, in that traditional sense. And so just in a supply and demand sense, everybody's looking for that thing they haven't seen before. And that one of a kind or that oddball item that you just can't instantly find on Amazon. So it really is the talk of our business. And it's, you know, there's always been people who dealt in ephemera. There's the American Ephemera Society, et cetera. But it's sort of become much more widely understood that, you know, this paper stuff that was either meant to be thrown out or just is very vulnerable is greatly in demand.
So do you spend most of your workday online or more than you do with people, I guess is my question?
Well, and is that I spend my day with books mostly.
Right. Well, that's nice. That's great.
And by that, I mean sort of looking for interesting material or, you know, mining our grist pile, as we call it, looking for things that we can either catalog and put online or put on eBay or and just trying to, again, think in terms of is this something that's unusual enough?
How long have you been in this business?
About 30 years.
How did you get into it? Don't you hate that question?
No, it's fair. My brother John is at Columbus Camera Group, and I actually started about 30 years ago selling camera manuals for them. My wife and I, Tina, have run the shop, and kind of gradually realized that there was this whole world of books and book selling that, you know, people actually could make a living at. My dad never believed it, thought it was insane. But and it's been great fun. So I started selling camera books and then gradually got into more general.
We are on our way to taking a short break. When we come back, I'm going to welcome your phone calls. Two people have been waiting, and I'm sorry for the long wait, but we had to get the show up and running. The number to call is 292-8513 if you'd like to talk about books with our panel on today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. We will be right back.
This is 89.7 NPR News. There's a slight chance of showers for today with steady temperatures right around 45 degrees. And cloudy skies for tonight with still that slight chance of rain, a low of 37. Clouds and breezy for Saturday and cooler, a high of 55 degrees. Support comes from Assistive Technology of Ohio. AT Ohio is now accepting donations of used computers to be refurbished and made available to Ohioans with disabilities. AT Ohio offers a variety of disability programs and services, including a device loan library. Donation information is at atohio.org. And support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. All Sides Weekend continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Amy Jurevich, I'm Christopher Purdy, back with Michelle Herman, who directs the creative writing MFA program in creative writing at The Ohio State University. Mark Maxwell is a manager of Hasbrite's Books on Bethel Road. So if you go up there, I want you to say hello to Mark and buy a lot of books. And Ed Hoffman is Ed Hoffman Books. He's an antiquarian book dealer here in Columbus. 30 years into the business, the man who knows everything about finding books that are hard to find. We've got two people who've been waiting patiently on the phone, so I want to go to Susan, who recommends a book for us. Hello, Susan.
Hi. Yes, it's I'm going to go in a little different direction. Fred Enderle had Dr. Eben Alexander on a show, Conversations of Faith, and I was actually aware of Dr. Alexander's book prior to that. And for those of us who are driven by grief and immobilized by sorrow, this is a fabulous book. Now, Dr. Alexander does not prove heaven. I think it's incorrectly titled.
Susan, what's the name of the book?
It's called Proof of Heaven by Eben Alexander. And he does not try and empirically prove that there's heaven. All he does is relate the history of his story, and I'll give it to you briefly. He's a neurosurgeon. As a practicing neurosurgeon, he was a pure empirical scientist. And he believed that anyone who had a near-death experience, it was the hallucination of a dying brain. Then, and inexplicably, he got meningitis, a very virile form of meningitis. And he understands that his brain was, as he puts it, offline, that he was, his cerebral cortex was being devoured by the meningitis. And his family was told he would not recover, that he would pass away, and if he didn't die, that he would be a vegetable. Again, miraculously, after 7 days, he had a complete recovery with therapy. He is now a practicing neuroscientist, again, neurosurgeon. And during that time, he experienced what he described as paradise. And I think the really interesting thing is that he was accompanied by a young woman he did not recognize. He was adopted, and 4 months after his recovery, he first saw a photo of his birth sister who died at age 30 and instantly recognized her as his companion on this journey. And it is, for people who are searching, it is a fabulous, fabulous book. He is a credible, credible source. It's in soft, I guess you call it soft cover, I mean not hard cover, is how it came out. And I read it in 2.5 hours. It's a very quick read.
And you can get it at Half Price Books at Bethel Road, probably.
You can, I'm sure.
Proof of Heaven. I thank you, Susan,
very
much.
I want to say it's been on the New York Times bestseller list for ages and ages, though. So.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
That's because, alas, everybody dies, you know? So there's always the chance. I don't know who I would talk to if I went to heaven, but anyway, that's another story. We have Carrie from Hilliard who's on the line. Hello, Carrie. Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie. And hi, Ed. It's Carrie from Waterson.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi. We just came back from an incredible cruise, absolutely incredible. And it was left for Miami, and then it docked in Madeira and Malaga and so on, and up to Barcelona. To read on the boat, I came across Innocents Abroad, written in, 1869 by Mark Twain?
Yep.
And Ed, I apologize. I got it free on Kindle. You know, they sent me a receipt, order confirmation 0.00.
I think you should buy a first edition.
Yeah, I probably should have. Then I couldn't have cruised. But I was absolutely, I sat there and giggled my way through the first portion of it because it was so much what we were experiencing in 2013. The guides who talked too much, the guides who couldn't, the guides who tried to steer you into tourist shops, the guides who in museums would talk about the paintings and art speak, the companions, et cetera. I mean, it just was so contemporary. So I recommend, if you go on a trip, and I recommend, Days on the Ocean are fabulous. It's really hard to come back from them. Twain dwells a lot on the excursions, and we found, actually, we did wonderful excursions.
Well, okay, I need to sort of move along with other calls.
Yeah, that's fine. Anyway, Innocents Abroad by Mark Twain, 1869.
Carrie, I thank you very much. I'm going to call Ed Hoffman right now and get myself a first edition of that. Thank you very much. Does Kindle wreck your business, the fact that a lot of people come to you for actual books as objects?
Yeah, absolutely,
right?
Chris.
Yeah.
And I don't think I don't think it wrecks the business. It's changing, obviously, the business, and as Michelle would say, in publishing and all the rest, it's enormous.
In fact, you're the one business it won't actually affect in the entire literary world.
In a way, we are selling the object, and we're selling books that people want to, you know, have the old copy of or the original copy of, and so I don't see it as a terribly negative thing, but I know it's a revolution in terms of publishing and availability in books. And
let's talk about books right now with Mark Maxwell at Half Price Books. You brought your stack with me, so give me another title to talk about.
I thought it would be fun to get some recommendations from my staff. They are voracious readers.
Yeah.
They have eclectic taste. I brought a book called Our Band Could Be Your Life, Scenes from the American Indie Underground, 1981 to 1991. It's by Michael Azarod. It is... It's a study of a dozen different bands that were active during the period. None of them became household names. Many of them were never commercially viable. These are bands like Black Flag and Fugazi. What I like about it, I love rock journalism, but this is a refreshing change from a lot of rock biographies in that it's not all name-dropping and debauchery. There's some debauchery, but mostly it's just artists who are doggedly following their vision, even when it sounds like no one wants to pay attention. So even if you don't like this type of music, you might find these stories to be inspiring.
Do these stories include tales of people realizing it's not going to happen?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's,
most musicians have to deal with that realization at some point. And what's great about these bands is many of them just kind of power through that. They keep going and make some kind of life out of it. You know, even if they didn't get the fame that they were looking for initially, they still find comfort in the actual art, which is, to me, the great thing.
And what are people buying from you now? What are coming? And don't say Shades of Grey again.
Sure, they still are buying Shades of Grey.
You got to get a gimmick, man. But what are some of the requests you're getting from people coming into the store?
Actually, Proof of Heaven is a super hot book right now, and there's a whole subgenre now of those. Heaven is for Real is another really popular book.
It's a little boy who died. Todd Burpo, right?
Yeah.
He came back. He didn't die. I mean, he
right?
He went,
yeah. Yeah, and that book we still sell every copy of that we get. There are, you know, obviously we sell the things that are on the bestseller list every day, but there are any number of what we call evergreens, titles that will always sell. Yesterday was the 6th anniversary of the death of Kurt Vonnegut. We still sell every Kurt Vonnegut book that we get in just as fast.
That's
as
a relief
we can buy
to hear.
Them.
It
I
is.
Must
that
say.
Is good to hear. Yes.
Makes me so
yes.
happy.
Yeah.
He's held up in the antiquarian market, too, tremendously.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to sell books, die. our number is 292-8513. You can also send us an email, allsides@wosu.org, or find us on Facebook at WOSU All Sides. allsides@wosu.org if you would like to send us a message for us to read on the air or give us a call. Michelle Herman, do you have time to read?
Actually, here's the funny thing about my life. We're in thesis season right now, which means the MFA students have turned in their book-length manuscripts that will probably be their first books. And the undergraduates who are pursuing degrees with an emphasis in creative writing do it too. So I have had 10 of these to read. And so I read all day. I read until my back goes out. And then when I'm done, my husband can't believe it. He comes into the living room and he finds me on the couch. And what do? To unwind after a 12-hour day of reading is read.
But you read what you really want
I read
to read
what I feel like
your
reading.
Heart, right.
Yeah, and so I read all the time.
So
I
mean, what are you reading? What's really
well, one of the, of course,
grabbing you.
This sounds a little pathetic after I spend all the time on the theses, but of course, when my own students publish books, they're the thing that's at the top of my stack of books. And so I was just thinking as you were talking about this book about bands of Joe Eastry's Hitless Wonder. Have you read it?
I have not. No.
So Joe Eastry is a graduate of the OSU MFA program who has been in a band called Watershed, a local Columbus band, forever, since he was in middle school, junior high, and wrote a terrific book about it, Hitless Wonder, A Life in Minor League Rock and Roll, which I read recently and loved. Chris Koch, who's another OSU alum, published a novel, You Came Back, recently. That's terrific. Claire Watkins's Battleborn is just...
That's getting a lot of attention.
It's winning all the prizes.
Right.
It's a great book. And she is a baby. She came to us straight from college and just graduated in 2011, and she just won the one story prize.
So if people could get past you, they have a good chance of being published.
Just come and be my student. Mike Cardos's new book. We're talking
Cardos,
about mystery.
Yes, we had
Cardos's
him, yeah.
The 3-Day Affair is just a terrific book. I you know, that's always first on my reading list.
Well, what do you have that you haven't read yet? You're like resent the fact that you don't have time to read this one book. Is there one book that you...
Geez, I actually have a stack on my night table, and I use both Kindle and actual books because I travel a lot. When I travel, this has been the great boon of Kindle. So I've got loaded onto my Kindle now Meg Wolitzer's new novel, The Interestings, which is going to be the first thing I'll read on my trip. I'm in the middle of Andrew Solomon's Far From the Tree, which...
Oh, that's brilliant.
That is brilliant. It's one of the best books I have ever read.
Yeah, it's one of the best. Wow. Far From the Tree is about dealing with children with challenges. It's a nonfiction book, and really, I mean, that was a tremendous book.
And the otherness between parents and children. And that's a good book to have on a Kindle, because that's a big, heavy
book. It's a big book,
The author, Michelle, is again...
Andrew Solomon.
Andrew Solomon. It's not a book to miss at all. Yeah. Well, what do you read? Mark, I mean, is it like living in the shop to go home and read? I mean, are you looking not to read when you go home? Or what?
No, we love to read. That's why we do it. You mentioned your student, Chris Koch. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Chris Koch is also an alumnist of Half Price Books. Chris and I were little booksellers together many years ago. And actually, his book, You Came Back, is a beautiful book set right here in Columbus. And I read it earlier, and it was wonderful. We read all the time. We're all voracious readers. If you go into the break room at Half Price Books at any given time, you'll find a number of booksellers with their noses in a book or occasionally a Kindle, but mostly a book.
Give me a title you've just read recently that really blew you away.
Well, I tend to read things that are 5 or 6 years old. So I just finished a book called The Nine by Jeffrey Toobin. I didn't know anything about the Supreme Court. And it's a great kind of gossipy recent history of the Supreme Court. So I'm just about to dive into the next one, which is called The Oath, which kind of continues the story. Mm.
Ed Hoffman, you told me, I think, that you don't read anything written after 1927 or something like that. So.
I need to give you a copy of my new book.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it, Michelle. I think I said my favorite author of all time is Flannery O'Connor. And so I go back and I read short stories from Good Man is Hard to Find.
Do you have peacocks at your house?
Like I'm a fan. And J.F. Powers. I guess I'm stuck in a time warp, but I read more current things. I read a lot of political journalism. That's an interest too.
We have two Facebook messages, two recommendations. First from Carrie, who said, "I'm reading and recommend Guided Lives, Fatal Voyage by historian Hugh Brewster." So make note of that. And Amber recommends What Would Martin Say by Clarence B. Jones. Glad to have that recommendation. And we have a call from Dan in Columbus who wants to talk about the used book scene in Columbus. Hi, Dan. Are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Go ahead.
I know that Mr. Hoffman does his work online. He used to have this lovely little bookstore on Arcadia.
Yeah,
thanks, Dan.
But I enjoy going into a used bookstore, smelling the old books, looking around, seeing a catchy title or lyric cover art. And you can't do that online, really.
No, absolutely not. And you can still do it at our place. And I should say you can do it at Acorn Books at Grandview. You can do it at Wycliffe's on North High Street. Columbus has a great used bookshop tradition and of course, Half Price Books all over town. So,
Where can I browse your store, Mr. Hoffman?
Well, we're up at 4167 North High. If you know North Star Cafe, and most people do, that's up north, we're in the block south of that. And we do welcome people to come and browse.
Why don't you give your website so people can look it up?
Yeah, it's hoffmansbookshop.com.
Okay.
And you can look at all our stuff that way. And absolutely, we'd welcome you to come. It's a crazy thing. In our business these days, we catalog things in the order they come in. So it's not a great browsing shop in that sense. It's total serendipity. The books are on the shelves by number. So
serendipity is just fine.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
Thank you, Dan, for your call. Bye-bye. Thank you. We have Patricia in Gahanna on the line who is recommending a book that I just read, and it may have just changed my life. And in fact, I'm working on an interview with the husband of the author. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead and talk about this book.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot believe that. It's like we were separated at birth. Before I get started.
I'm so flattered. Go ahead.
I remember when Hoffman's bookstore was on Arcadia going back, oh, my goodness, when I was in high school. Wow.
Oh, please.
All right, the name of the book.
Come back. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay,
Patricia.
The name of the book is Until I Say Goodbye. It's by Susan Spencer, S-P-E-E-N-S-E-R, hyphen Wendell, W-E-N-D-E-L-L. The lady is a reporter with a newspaper in Florida, finds out that she has ALS, decides to spend her last year of decent health having adventures with friends, family members, and it is so inspiring. She doesn't dwell on, I'm going to be dead in a couple of years.
There's nothing depressing about this book.
Nothing. Wow. It is so uplifting, and she just gets every drop of life there is. And every
she finds
drop.
Her birth mother, too.
Exactly.
She was adopted, yeah.
The subtitle is My Year of Living with Joy, and she is joyous. Her birth mother. They go to Greece. It's fabulous.
She is, by the way, I checked, she is still with us.
Wonderful.
But now she is pretty much completely disabled. She doesn't speak anymore, but she does make appearances, and her husband is really, I think he's the saint hero of that book. Yeah,
he is.
Anyway.
Oh, run to the library.
Okay,
and get
yeah.
It.
Until I Say Goodbye by Susan Spencer Wendell, and I recommend that too. Thank you so much for your call. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And we have Steve from Upper Arlington, and he's asking about a writer. I'm so glad because I need to know more about Lewis Bromfield. Hi, Steve. Steve, right? Oh, I lost Steve. Sorry about that. Lost Steve. Okay, how about Rosie in Clintonville? Hello, Rosie.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I am calling because I have found among my father's things a copy of Warbirds, The Diary of an Unknown Aviator, written in Oxford, England. Which is where my father went to join the Air Force because we didn't have one yet. It's a very old book. It was a limited publication, and I'm wondering how I might or who I might talk to have that restored before it completely falls apart.
Sure. Beckenor is an old line bindery company on West Broad Street here in Columbus. They've been around forever. You could certainly talk to them. And I have other people I could recommend, but you might start there.
Beckenor.
Yep.
Thank you so much. And
sure.
I'm currently reading Salvage the Bones. Recommend it highly.
Very good. Thank you so much. And I'm going to throw in a recommendation of a book I just finished called The End of Your Life Book Club by Will Schwalbe. Actually, his father offered me a job 25 years ago, which I didn't realize till I read this book. But it's about a book club he and his mother started as she was dying from cancer. Now, here we go yet with another possibly depressing book that wasn't. The End of Your Life Book Club by Will Schwalbe. And Steve is back, having just disconnected him. Thank you, Steve. Let me make sure I've got the right button about Lewis Bromfield. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Go ahead.
I've never read Lewis Bromfield, but I was just up at Malabar Farms and just wondered what your panelists think about him and if they could compare him to anybody who's writing today.
Thank you, Steve. Let's have a discussion. Michelle, what about Lewis Bromfield? Do you know his work?
I do not.
Okay.
You know, Mark, go ahead. You were going to say. I'd say, in general, my sense is the novels have not held up, but the books about the land and about ecology and related farming and all the rest are still in great demand, in my experience, and I think are very good books. But what do you think, Mark?
Right. Well, Lewis Bromfield, of course, was a very well-known novelist. He was a best-selling novelist who put his career on hold to operate a farm. And he was very interested in agriculture. He was interested in sustainable agriculture techniques. And I would agree with that assessment. I mean, these are things that people are paying attention to today. And Bromfield's books on agriculture are still in print and highly sought after.
Yeah.
The one thing I know, it's just terrible about Bromfield, is that Bogie and Bacall were married.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So his era was the 40s or 50s. We have to take a break. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Don't go anywhere. Back shortly.
Daniel Handler, a.k.a. Lemony Snicket, the author of the comic gothic novels A Series of Unfortunate Events, has a new children's book. On the next Fresh Air, Handler talks with us and plays a couple of Snicket songs on his accordion.
So I like to say that I'm one of the few people in the history of the world to take up the accordion basically in order to meet women.
Join us.
Fresh air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 44 degrees with a slight chance of showers today and a high right around 50. Clouds with a slight chance of rain tonight and a low of 37. Support comes from OSU's Department of Neurology, conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can improve the outcome of a traumatic brain injury, or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey and how to opt out of the study, are at protectiii.com. And support comes from the Midland Theater, presenting Frank D'Ambrosio's Broadway. Best known for his portrayal of the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera, D'Ambrosio's solo show celebrates the music of Broadway. Sunday afternoon, April 14th. Tickets and more information at midlandtheater.org. And All Sides Weekend continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Amy Jurevich is our producer, and I thank you, Amy. I'm Christopher Purdy. We have our last segment coming up of our book program with Michelle Herman, who directs the MFA program in creative writing at The Ohio State University, and her brand new book is called Stories We Tell Ourselves. Mark Maxwell is the manager of Half Price Books on Bethel Road and probably the best read person in the state of Ohio. And Ed Hoffman helps people be the best read person in the state of Ohio with Hoffman Books on High Street. Here's a question I want to ask each of you. Is there one writer that you all have who is unjustly neglected? We were talking about Lewis Bromfield and deciding he was just neglected. But who is unjustly neglected?
J.F. Powers.
Okay, talk about him a little bit.
You know, his subject matter was Catholic priests and parishes back in the 50s and 60s.
That's kind of my era. Yeah, that's...
And, and if I do recommend that people have not read Powers' short stories, absolutely brilliant and incredible writing, and I think he is the most underrated American author, really, of all time.
I don't know if he's the most, but he certainly was a great writer.
Absolutely incredible.
Mark Maxwell.
I have a favorite author who fell out of favor a few years ago. Stephen Ambrose was a wonderful historian.
Yes.
He became very, very popular, but then towards the end of his life, he had some problems with citations in some of his books. He was accused of plagiarism. There was a cloud that kind of followed him for the rest of his life. Sure.
Yeah.
And now, you know, historians kind of shy away from him. But he, for my money, Stephen Ambrose has some of the best political biographies. I brought a copy of Eisenhower, Soldier and President, the one-volume version of a three-volume work. This is the best biography on Eisenhower. I think Ambrose also had the best biography of Richard Nixon, which is enormously informative, well-researched, and fair-minded, which is hard to find.
That's hard to do with Richard Nixon. Okay. And Michelle Herman, I'm really interested to know what you...
You know, the problem is picking one. Okay. I mean, it seems to me most literary writers are underrated. I think a lot about Laurie Siegel.
She was here
for a few years. We managed to nab her at the end of her teaching career. And her last book was called Shakespeare's Kitchen. She should be mentioned in the same breath with Cynthia Ozick, for example, or even Philip Roth. And she isn't. And I think about a writer who even writers mostly haven't heard of, George P. Eliot. Does that mean anything to either of you?
No, yes, who is he?
He was a writer of short stories and essays. He is, I think, completely out of print at this point, although some university press brought out a selected George P. Eliot reader. But I love those stories so much, and I believe I found a copy of Among the Dangs, an early story collection of his, at Hoffman when it was still open.
By the way, Ed Hoffman has a laptop here, and every time we give a title, he's busy. So I think
I'm on Via Libri.
But I honestly, I mean, it seems to me every year, wonderful books are published that disappear without a trace. And
why? Are there too many books being published that are mediocre?
I don't know the answer I don't know if that's the answer, but I think that we're at an age where publishers are pretty much printing and shipping books at best and picking just a few to promote. And of course, the ones they're picking to promote are the ones that they already believe are going to have a built-in audience.
So what does it take to get an ad in the New York Times for review of books? How do you choose, I guess?
How does a publisher choose to do that? You know, my first book, Missing, had an ad in the New York Review of Books, and It was a small university press doing it. These days, it doesn't even come up as a possibility. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure that ads actually are the thing that do it anyway. Mm-hmm. But I do know that most books come out and no one even knows that they're out. You know, every once in a while, there'll be a new novel by a brand new writer. I'm thinking about Curtis Sittenfeld, whose novel Prep, which I think is a terrific novel. But it would have disappeared without a trace, except the publicists at her publisher all fell in love with it, and they threw themselves into.
Is that the novel about Laura Bush?
No, that actually, she wrote that one afterwards.
That's very interesting.
Which was a very interesting novel, too, which probably wouldn't have been read if not for Prep.
So word of mouth is huge, Michelle?
Word of mouth is really huge. Yeah.
Programs like ours.
And,
absolutely.
Yeah, and a platform.
So we should explain, because we were talking about it before we got on the air. What a platform! I don't even really know what the definition of a platform.
Well, this is a platform.
Fan base?
This is one.
A
platform
thing.
is a way to get the word out.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what writers need.
A platform. You were told that by an agent, apparently.
I was told that. My agent was told that by an editor this morning, saying I didn't have a significant enough platform for the particular book.
So they want the platform to do their work for them.
Yes.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. Because they don't want to be marketing the books, spending to market the books themselves.
Yeah, right. And my platform is literary readers and literary writers, but apparently there's only 5,000 of us.
So if you're planning to be one, forget it, because we're at 5,000. It's like Facebook friends. We're done. Don't go there anymore. Mark Maxwell, give me another title.
Another recommendation for my staff. This is a graphic novel. It's called Why the Last Man. It's set in a world where a sudden plague has killed half the population instantly, specifically the male half, except for one young man, Yorick Brown, who spends the next couple of years trying to solve the mystery. I avoided this book for years, even though it was very popular, because I thought the idea sounded kind of juvenile. But it turns out to be better than I expected. And what's great, it's a 10-volume work, 10 slim volumes. And it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, which is kind of refreshing. Most comic series are kind of open-ended. They're designed to go on forever. We've been telling stories about Batman since 1938.
Well, let me just digress. Let me ask you, just give me a precise of graphic novels, because people my age don't know what they are. And they're very hot. They're very, very
they're
hot.
They're extremely
right now.
Hot. Yeah. The graphic novel section in my store is one of the smallest sections in the store, and it's one of the sections. It's the third best selling section after fiction and kids. It's huge. Graphic novels are what we used to call comic books. The traditional comic book is kind of fallen out of favor in favor of a larger form. In many cases, graphic novels are simply several issues of a comic book that are bound together for the convenience of readers. But increasingly, we're seeing really accomplished work done exclusively for the graphic novel format. Art Spiegelman's Mouse, Satrapi's Persepolis.
Was Mouse like the first one that really was famous?
It was
Mouse,
the first one that hit.
It won a Pulitzer Prize, and I think that really legitimized the form. But Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi these are books that are being read in schools now.
Well, and Alison Bechdel's Fun Home, which is a graphic memoir, it's a fantastic book that would not have worked, I don't think, either. It wouldn't have worked as just drawings, but it wouldn't have worked just as text. It's the perfect example.
There are possibilities in this format that, that I don't want to say exceed the possibilities of prose, but you can do different things with this format that you couldn't otherwise do.
We have a message from Steve on Facebook, who has a couple of recommendations for us. Essays from Julie Sisyphus in The Bluebird Effect and Letters from Eden. And he also recommends a book that I read and was deeply moved by, People of the Book by Geraldine Brooks, which is a... Did you read that, Mark? Are you familiar with that?
I did not, but it certainly has a following.
Yeah, yeah. It's about a sort of an end-of-life journey, as I recall. It's a very rich book. It's very well worth reading and spending the time on. We have time for a few more phone calls. We're getting a lot of Facebook messages, which I appreciate. 292-8513 if you'd like to call and join the conversation with Michelle Herman, Mark Maxwell, and Ed Hoffman. Talk about books, talk about old books, new books, bad books, good books, whatever books we'll talk about. So, tell me more about Powers. When did he die?
He died in, I think, 1964.
And that's as far as you go.
No, I'm sorry. He died later than that. I'm sorry, Chris. Mort Durbin.
Look it up.
Mort Durbin is the great novel.
Mort Durbin, okay.
Which won the American Book Award. And it's just an absolutely tremendous story. And his attention to the language and to the sentence, in a way, and what he can do with it is just absolutely fabulous.
What is the weirdest request you've ever had?
Oh, my gosh.
That you can talk about on the air.
I don't know about the weirdest request. You know, I was going to say it's what's changed is you can find anything that's ever been printed, these days. And for that, I use something called ViaLibri.net, which is an absolutely incredible search engine. And I encourage everybody to take a look at it that's, you know, interested in this. It's just ViaLibri.net. It's free and accessible, there's virtually nothing that's ever been printed that, in a way, you can't locate these days, and that's what's changed tremendously.
Especially if you call Ed Hoffman. We have Chris from Westerville with a recommendation. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah, I recently picked up Will Self's recent book that was shortlisted on the Booker. It's called Umbrella, and it's great. I've never read Will Self, to be honest with you, and I just heard an interview on NPR with him, and the way he talked about the book, I got kind of interested, and then I picked it up, and I love it. He even quotes James Joyce at the beginning, and it kind of reminds you a lot of James Joyce's kind of stream of, I call it stream of consciousness. I mean, Ulysses thing and all that. And it's the kind of book you kind of got to sink into, surrender to, but it's really good. It's really awesome.
Umbrella by Will Self, and Mark Maxwell brightened up when we said that. So
I love Will Self. Yeah? Will Self, he's a British novelist. He's been active for a while. He's got like a dozen novels. He's kind of the weird cousin to Ian McEwan, maybe. But he's starting to get recognized in England, and that's a great thing. The Quantum Theory of Insanity is an older book
of
his.
That's
great. Yeah, the idea of the story is that at any given time in the universe there is a finite amount of insanity, and it's distributed among people in different amounts.
And speaking of James Joyce, I don't mind telling the world I just finished Ulysses.
Hey,
congratulations!
I just finished it. I loved it. I didn't get all of it, but I read the whole thing. I loved it, and it was like the diction of it was like sitting with my grandparents in my grandmother's kitchen in Arlington, Massachusetts. In 1962. I mean, it was just wonderful. So there you are. Oh, Eric from Columbus has a wonderful question because we've had a lot of discussion about this, about short stories. Mm-hmm. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've been very into short stories, especially recently, and I was wondering what sort of suggestions your panel might have.
You come to the right place.
Well, thank you. I recently got into Sherman Alexie, and I really like his short stories. I don't know if you've even heard of him.
Yep. Okay, we all know him.
Yep.
Okay, Eric, let's talk about short stories. Recommendations, Michelle Herman.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I hardly even know where to begin. Alice Munro first, who may be one of the two or three greatest living writers in English. A writer I adore who isn't read nearly as much as she used to be is Laurie Colwin. Writes some wonderful short stories. Go back and read Grace Paley, stories that she published in the 60s and 70s. I don't know how you say her name, Maylie Malloy. Do either of you know how to pronounce that? No. Mm-hmm. So Both Ways is the Only Way I Like It was published fairly recently, and it was one of the best collections of stories that I've read in a long time. And then, of course, there's Chris Koch's collection,
We're in Trouble.
Yeah. Don Pollock's, I'm back to students of mine, Don Pollock's Knock 'em Stiff, which is one of the best collections that's come out in the last decade.
Yeah, good for you, Michelle.
What else do you have?
How about Mark? What's really great?
If you have an interest in short stories, honestly, I would suggest you check out Best American Short Stories.
Absolutely.
It's a yearly anthology.
Yeah.
It's always high quality.
They're edited by big names too, aren't they? Generally,
right. And they generally include a mix of established writers and people who are getting started out. It's a great way to discover artists that you want to check out more often. For short stories, I like Donald Bartlome, who is an early American postmodernist. The short story collection you see most often of his is called 40 Stories, and it's often taught on a college level.
And Ed Hoffman and I like Dickens' Journey to America from 1940, from the 1840s, because he went to Boston and wrote up my hometown and wrote very, very much about Victorian-era Boston, which I liked very much. We have Dave from Springfield who wants to talk about a neglected author. Hi, Dave.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Isaac Asimov.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is Asimov neglected?
Do you think he's neglected?
Not in my world.
He rescued me from addiction.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
You know, I traded my addiction to heroin and alcohol for reading Isaac Asimov. He saved me. It was my escape, my new escape. And
a brilliant writer and a brilliant and prolific writer. My gosh. Yeah.
I know.
And hugely collectible.
Yes. He started with The Foundation and ended the last book he wrote was also Found Forward The Foundation.
Yeah.
And everything in between, including short stories.
Isaac Asimov. Okay, we all know that name, and I think you may be right. He may be neglected by some of us, David. Thank you very much for bringing him back to us. We have about 3 minutes left if you want one more call, but if you don't, we have three very mouthy and intelligent guests who can give us some final notes and recommendations. Mark Maxwell, let me start with you.
I brought a book called You and I by Nicholson Baker. Nicholson Baker is a fairly well-known novelist and essayist. He's a crusader for print media, and I appreciate that. He has beautifully crafted prose. It's generally kind of discursive. This is my favorite book of his, and it's not his best-known book. It is a meditation on John Updike. Although Baker admits in the beginning that he hasn't seriously read Updike. He hasn't studied him. He's only met him a couple of times, so it ends up being the Updike in this book is the Updike that Nicholson Baker has created out of half remembered passages and literary gossip, and it's a wonderful meditation on fame and memory and ambition.
I'm old enough to remember that when Updike's novel Couples was a scandal. It was an absolute scandal.
Yeah. And I got in trouble for reading it.
So did I. I did, too. I read it in like 10th grade, and I got in trouble for that, too. The nuns were not happy with me. And you wanted to say, well, how do you know it's a dirty book? Because, sister. Michelle Herman.
The writer I probably, right up there with Alice Munro, but the writer I probably admire most is the South African novelist J.M. Coetzee.
Ah, yes.
I would recommend all of his books. My personal favorite is Slow Man, but I love his memoirs, too. There's never been a word he's written that hasn't been worth reading.
And by the way, we had a PS up here. Cindy apparently called in and wants a recommendation for a good book on cyber hacking. I don't know if she wants to do it or she wants to prevent it. But
how to? Or
I guess. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not one to. I guess, Cindy, you probably have to go online.
There are some great novels on the subject.
Really?
Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash is a science fiction classic. It's funny, and it's very knowledgeable. He's got a number of other books, but that's the best one, Snow Crash.
And Ed Hoffman, I'm going to give you the last word because you and I, we all like authors who've been long dead.
Frank O'Connor.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I taught Sunday school for a long time, and when I taught about the sacraments, we had to read First Confession, and I do recommend it. It's an absolutely wonderful and hilarious and fun
And
short
you can
story.
Get it from Ed Hoffman, right?
I'll find you one.
Give me your website again.
It's hoffmansbookshop.com.
And one can come and visit you, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To get a little bit of the flavor of that old Arcadia.
Until someone invents an app for smelling what
books. What a great idea. Yes. Because, yes, we all loved Arcadia, but we still love you, and we love your new location as well.
Thank you so much.
My guests for All Sides Weekend Books today have been Michelle Herman, who directs the MFA program in creative writing at The Ohio State University, author of the new book, Stories We Tell Ourselves, with cover art by Glenn Holland, who is Michelle Herman's husband and father of their daughter, Grace. Mark Maxwell is the manager of Half Price Books on Bethel Road and enormously knowledgeable about Goodreads. And Ed Hoffman is enormously knowledgeable about finding Goodreads you didn't know you want, but you do. And I'm Christopher Purdy, and I can barely read, and I'm delighted that you joined me today. My thanks to Amy Jurevich, our producer. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.